All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a brand new edition of Pod by the Bay, proudly presented by the Bay Area Examiner. I'm your host, Nathan Bond. Joined alongside me, as always, Seth Barnador and Robert Stieg. And folks, we are introducing brand new member of the Bay Area Examiner tonight, Vanessa Wenzel. Welcome to this crew. I'm so happy to have you on as a photographer, reporter. We're gonna break some news for us. We're gonna cover the gamut of USF athletics. Super excited to have you on. We wanted to kind of introduce you to the masses. So why don't you start by telling us, first things first, why did you pick USF to go to school? What was your major? When did you graduate? And kind of how did you become a photojournalist / reporter? So,
okay.
I know a lot of questions off the bat. Wendy Witt would kill me if I asked four questions in a row, but I did it anyway. So go ahead.
It's okay. First of all, thank you for the opportunity and thank you for having me. I'm really, really excited to get started with you guys. I'm just excited to find a platform and talk about USF because the love for USF is very strong. So why did I pick USF? For one, was actually I had a scholarship to Florida State to be a nursing student. And I literally just recently got engaged. And from there, I was like, well, I think I want to stay closer to home. And I started a job that was a photography job in schools. And somebody let me know about USF. I was against USF by all means. Like, I grew up in St. Pete, Tampa Bay. And I was like, it's too close to home for me. Like the typical Tampa Bay story, honestly. But they had a journalism program and I was in photography school at the time. And I was like, you know what? That seems pretty fair, pretty fit for me. Like the classes were perfect. The schedule was perfect. It was in St. Pete. And I was like, I'll apply. And I got in literally 2 weeks later. So I chose USF just because it fit my needs at the time. And St. Pete campus was very homey when I toured it and I loved it. So I completely like flipped where I was going. And I was like, as much as I'd love to move to Tallahassee and be a Knoll, which I know is like the worst thing to say, I'm so sorry. I was like, I'm going to go to USF. So I went to USF. I majored in digital communications and multimedia journalism. And I graduated in December. And I started in January 2022, got out December 2023. And I absolutely fell in love with USF. I fell in love with the campuses. The culture, our fan base for anything is also insane and very dedicated. And I started as a photojournalist because I was in my reporting class and I rose my hand to my professor. She was like, what do you guys think you're going to do for your stories? I had no idea what my beat was going to be at the time, my topics. I said, my story is I'm going to interview Tom Brady because he just retired. First of all, I'm a freshman. I have no idea what I'm talking about, or technically a junior. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I can't reach Tom Brady. I don't know what I'm doing. But in that moment was also I decided maybe I want to do it because sports is where I'm going to go. I was a cheerleader my whole life. I tried probably every sport that you can name. I tried to be in athletics. It was kind of like it was bound to happen. And that class gave me that, like, let's get into the sports realm. So I reached out to Brian Seagrass. I actually don't know how to say his name. I'm so sorry. But I reached out to him and I was like, I would really love to build a sports relationship. We had a podcast at the St. Pete campus called Bullcast. Shout out Bullcast. It doesn't live anymore, but it was an amazing thing. I was the sports reporter, the photojournalist, and I just started covering all USF athletics. And I fell in love. Like there was nothing like the adrenaline rush of being on the sidelines, being in the press room, meeting the coaches, the players. There was a story to be told from the moment I walked onto that field and I was photographing to the press, to the interviews. The culture of everything, I fell in love. And then from there, I started covering the Bucks locally. And that definitely did it for me. Like I was at training camp. I asked a question to Baker Mayfield. I asked Kyle Trask a question, like big, big shot names for local, of course. But I was like, there's nothing else I would rather do. And it was kind of a no-brainer for them. I just haven't stopped. I covered all USF this fall. I've covered all the athletics. I've covered all of the Bucks season. I've covered the Lightning. I paid very close attention to the basketball season as well. And I'm here now. So I guess that's me.
Very well put. You know, you get those opportunities sometimes, asking a question of someone that you don't think you'd ever talk to, like
right.
Being able to ask Nick Saban a question is like was a bucket list thing for me. And I shoot or shoot. I was so glad I was able to do that. USF used his answer on like all of the promotional marketing stuff over the next like 3 or 4 weeks. So that was pretty cool. So I definitely get like asking Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask questions and kind of just putting yourself out there, even if you may fall flat on your face. Like I did ask Rodney Adams once, like, how was it being fast? Sometimes the questions aren't A pluses, but
yes,
you get a chuckle, you get a good response. It's totally fine. You know, things like that happen, but it's a trial and error, and we're excited to have you on board. You mentioned you kind of followed the basketball season pretty closely. There was one of the photos you sent over to me was that shot of Case and Pryor as the confetti is falling. That's a pretty spectacular shot to have. As a photographer, is there a place like on the field or on the basketball court where like, you know, all right, this has the makings of having like the perfect angle, perfect shot. Like, I know you kind of, you're stuck to the baseline, but is there anything like inside baseball photography that maybe some folks don't really know or understand how to get the angles?
Yeah, there's definitely, when it comes to the football field, I feel like we all very much gravitate like to the end zones because of course you can get that touchdown. But say you get up to at least like the 20-yard line when they're up at like the 30 and the 40, you can really get, of course, them before a snap, but also the emotions on the benches. Like it's a secret little spot. A lot of like you'll go over there and there's maybe one or two people, but you can get the emotions of the players after a play, the emotions of the coaches. That's one of my favorite places I've found. And then courtside, we actually got assigned spots. So we had no choice other than to be up by the USF bench. And we were right, like literally right the last two spots to that corner before you go up to press row. But if I had a choice, I would probably prefer to be either right under the basket to get that like dunk from underneath. Or if you're around the court and go up behind the stands, like behind the 100 section. So that way you can kind of get the emotion of the fans when there's a dunk or any score at all. But you also are going to play out the whole scene of the play happening. You see where the players are. You see where the slip was that got them there. Like those would be the two places. And then say I'm shooting baseball. Also, my favorite thing is being right behind home plate. So if they're sliding into home, trying to get it, I can catch that dirt up in the air. And I love that.
I got to say, from the photography side of things, I never had to worry about assigned spots when I was shooting because I was one of like seven people total, including the USF bench. And so I was like, I had free reign on the side of the court. So hearing that they have assigned spots now is hilarious to me.
Yeah,
we have like there. So there's five on the USF side and then there's five more on the other side. And then on the away side, I would say. There's also like five more on one side and then there's two like USF advantage spots now. And then you can't go in the corners anymore. Like we used to be able to go in the corners. And then even some of the stand spots are assigned now, which I think it's because there's just an uptick in obviously USF media, but uptick in what seems to be sports photographers. Because even when I started, I was like one of maybe two or three for USF also.
Yeah. Well, I guess, when you start being good at the thing that your university is supposed to be known for, it's going to bring more people out. But that's really exciting stuff. I know you covered football extensively. Was there a game or a moment that kind of stuck out to you as you were covering football season this past year?
Okay, so there's a few. I would say when it came to USF, I actually have like a moment that stuck out to me. You might have even been in the press conference. It was an Alabama press conference where I actually asked Coach Golish. It only sticks out to me because it made me work harder. Where I asked Golish if they would have started their actual starting QB at the time, if it would have been maybe a fair fight to see where USF performs right now. if that would have been better for him. I didn't word it right in the moment and I couldn't think of how to reword it, but that sticks out to me because it made me think, okay, did I do my homework? Yes, I did. Am I sure I did my homework? I have to be. I'm 100%. I'm one of three women in the room. So like, I have to make sure I know my stuff. I know it's a different point of view for a lot of people, but as a woman, like, you have to do 110% more work because most men look at me and say, you're just a girl kind of like clout following sports. No, I'm fully invested in this. So that was a moment that was like, okay, you're doing the right thing. You did your homework. Coach didn't understand your question, but next time be 110%. So that stuck out for me. Also, it was an Alabama game. The stadium was packed. I'd never experienced anything like that. And then when we found out that we were going to the bowl game, that was a huge game for me because it was like my last one. A lot of people knew me on the sidelines. Like, it started to really feel like home, and it just set in that it was bittersweet of my last covering game, but also like, we're going to a bowl game. So after the game, all the players were rushing the field. The emotions were high. The adrenaline was high. Like, everybody wanted to be, you know, somebody in that moment. Somebody wanted a photo. Somebody wanted a video. So the opportunity for photojournalism was there for every emotion. That was one of my things. And then covering NFL season, I would say, was obviously, I mentioned it before in one of my chats, but covering Jason Kelce's last game and watching him cry off the field was one of the first moments that I was like, I'm covering history. And it's an amazing, amazing thing, but also very emotional. And I get to be a part of history. And that was really cool. I'm able to tell this story, you know, so somebody asks me in the future, how was Jason Kelce's last game? What was his emotions? Like, I have that story to tell. I have that visual to tell. And so that's what really has stuck out with me so far.
What's your favorite thing to cover sports wise? Do you have a favorite sport? Is it football? It seems like we're getting a lot of football for it.
I love football. I love covering football. I was a football cheerleader growing up, so I kind of only know like the Friday, Saturday, Sunday night lights. And then I just started getting the love for basketball because it's so fast.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, honestly, if Alabama had started the right quarterback, I don't think that game would have been as close. So maybe...
See, quite possibly
you're onto something. I don't think, I think US has probably lucked out. But we'll leave it as such.
That one hurt.
Totally understandable. Again, how is it like being fast? I've asked that to two people. Second time I kind of prefaced it and did say, hey, this is a very stupid question. so he took it in stride. As you kind of mentioned basketball, wanted to kind of shift gears a little bit. We're actually going to talk some USF basketball transfers. So Stieg, there's been some news over the last week or so since we've last chatted. How's USF been in the portal?
Fine. they're being cautious and smart throughout their transfer portal process. Obviously, this entire transfer portal offseason has been tumultuous, and it's about to get even more tumultuous over the next couple of days because the transfer portal is going to close on May 1st for college basketball. So if you're not in beforehand, you know, you're stuck. But they USF obviously had to replace quite a bit, and they're doing a pretty good job replacing with good standing production, and the most recent being Jimmy Wall or. I'm going to mess this up because of where he's from. Jimmy Williams from Wallace State. I keep on wanting to call him Jimmy Wallace this entire time. But a third team JUCO All-American as a redshirt freshman. So he's mightily productive as a guard. Shot about 37% from three. So you can kind of see what they're might be trying to replicate. At least production wise in this offense. What was it?
He was 50% from the floor or over 50% from the floor too.
Yeah. So. 50, almost 54% from the floor. And then, I thought this was staggering. 8.3 rebounds per game is like, I mean, damn near a triple double. And I think it was I think he did have a triple double at times. But he's a productive guard, and exactly what USF kind of needs coming off, either coming off the bench or in that starting lineup, depending on where they try to pivot next season. I'm expecting Jaden Reed to take a starting role, and I'm expecting Jimmy Williams to potentially come off the bench, maybe start every once in a while. You know, a strong player. Yeah, I loved it. The second that he showed interest and I looked up his stats, I was like, all right, we got to lock this guy down, because he's either going to end up at USF or he's going to somehow end up at like UAB and like hit like 10 threes against us one game and just destroy my soul. So very happy with that production pickup. Joins Deontay Green, a power forward from Florida State, and then Jameel Reynolds, the center from Cincinnati. So far of the six departures, we have replaced three of those scholarships. And then you have CJ Brown coming in, kind of replacing Jose Plasser, who's graduating. So that's the current state of the union. Three more scholarships to play with. I don't know what they're doing.
Interesting. So through with three spots left, what still have Corey Walker, right? Mm-hmm. You expect Daniel Taloba. I probably butchered his name.
You'd expect him to play.
You'd expect him to take at least a jump, right?
Yeah.
Probably another center power forward combo somewhere, I think, in that area. And then like a Sam Hines-esque kind of person who knows how to dribble would be pretty clutch. And like a small forward shooting guard kind of hybrid. I think the point guard's pretty set. Maybe a third one just for fun. But I would expect kind of one at each level. I don't think they're going to double up on anything.
There's one guy that I don't really know the optics of, how the interest level is. I'm sure we're going to find out by the end of the weekend, since that's when they normally do these visits. But he's another JUCO forward. He's like 6'9". His name's Wilhelm Boding. He's from Sweden originally, but then he was playing at Vincennes University. He's like the only other guy that like I've seen them kind of like show a bit of interest in over the last week and a half. I think they might just close. So they might grab him, maybe, is what I'm thinking. And then the last two spots, they might go high school. There's some, I've heard how Amir is recruiting and treating this transfer portal. And it's giving me the idea that he's more inclined to try to build from the high school ranks, especially because there's a lot of still, even with Chris Youngblood and Kaysen Pryor and Selton Miguel leaving, there's still a lot of old guys or older, like juniors going into their senior years, kind of eligibility wise. So right. I'm thinking they might try to go younger. Again, the reason why Jimmy Williams is such a great pickup is he's a redshirt freshman. You're going to get at least, I think, 4 years out of him.
We'll settle for two.
with how transfer portal is, I'm settling for one at this rate. But I'm gearing towards him liking the idea of grabbing some guys from high school, especially because everyone's eyes are on the portal right now and everyone's looking at it. You might be able to snag like a high three star who maybe had an offer from like Ole Miss that they backed off, or something along those lines, because they got, you know, too much eye candy in the portal. So that's what I'm looking at. I don't expect another big splash, but I'm expecting some good production at least from the bench for these remaining three scholarships.
I would think they need to get a stretch four of some type, right? Like they've got to have somebody, a forward that can shoot some threes, because Green is not that guy. I think he's attempted like less than 30 his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be a 3-point shooter, which it seemed like last year, if they could have gotten a guy that could stretch the four a little bit from that four spot, that would really help them. Pryor was kind of that guy once he started to shoot a little bit better at the second half of the year, but you know, Stroud was not that guy last year. Maybe if he's better this year, maybe it can be him, but it wasn't a great outside shooter last year. He did other things really well. But I think, to me, that would be something that would help them immensely, even if it's a guy that comes off the bench, but open up the floor a little bit for some of your guards.
Yep.
Yeah. That's where I'm like, I don't know what they're doing, because I mean, with Jameel Reynolds and Daniel Taloba, I think they might try to go like three guard, one forward, one center. But I
right.
He finds a way to put the most productive five on the floor at any particular time. So just go five guards, really. Who cares? Have fun.
Yeah. The interesting thing that happened last year was at, for the majority of the season until like Sam Hinds got the day he broke his nose and I can't even remember the dude's name. He transferred out. He played like 3 minutes. Like that was like, I think it was in the conference tournament. At almost every single point of the game, there's always like five guys who could actually score a basket. And I think he wants to, you've got to be able to kind of replace that, especially in basketball today. Like you cannot play 4-on-5 offensively anymore. It's such an absolute killer. Like even when Sam was out there, it's like, all right, he'll like muscle up a couple of rebounds and get an offensive, you know, rebound and put in a layup. He's not going to beat you off the dribble or anything like that. I was kind of same with Kobe, but Kobe could at least hit a couple outside shots. I think getting that out of it, getting that kind of production out of the newcomers would be great. And then finding whoever the next vocal leader of this team is going to be. Outside, you can replace the production of Chris Youngblood by kind of spreading it out, you know, Moneyball style, but replacing what he brought intangibly to the team is going to be quite different. I think Jaden Reed is not that guy. I think he is the I'm going to get in your face and I'm going to tell you how good I am kind of guy, and you need that. I don't know who on the team has the calming presence to smile at you while he's eviscerating it you for 35. And that's, you always need those silent assassins. So we'll see kind of where that goes.
Oh,
next
yeah.
Next up, football transfers. There's was some news on what day is today? Thursday. God, my days are running together. Thursday, Kendall Dennis finally entered the transfer portal. I think the overarching theme with this portal, the guys who left,
they don't there hasn't been anybody they wanted to keep.
No.
Or were desperate to keep, rather.
No. And, you know, I was listening to Split Zone Duo today. They kind of went deep into like Colorado and how all of last year's Louis is leaving, right? And it just kind of keeps bringing back this thought back into my mind. Like, it sounds bad, but USF really hasn't lost anybody of that much importance going into 2024 yet. Obviously, Jaden Alexis going down with a torn ACL as he kind of came on late. Sure. Donovan Jennings seems like he's on track to get drafted by Saturday at the earliest. I mean, you run a 4.495 at 6'4", 300 some odd pounds, I think you're going to turn some heads. So he may break the like 8-year streak of non-drafted or having a USF player drafted. But all the important pieces are back. So like, why not? Like, why not make a run at it? And I think they're being super selective, and Steve, you can probably discuss this a little bit more. They've been doing their due diligence on some folks that I think the due diligence needed to happen on, if that would be a fair statement. Cormani McLean.
I was about to say, we could be more on the notes if we want, just breathe it out into existence.
I mean,
every team is doing that though. Like if we're being honest, every team is asking the questions that everyone else has had the burning questions of, is, you know, what went down with the Miami situation, with, you know, committing to Colorado, what happened at Colorado, because it wasn't as clean as it appeared, and Deion's comments towards him. Like, there's a lot of, pardon the pun, but there's a lot of baggage on that Louis. Like,
yes,
a lot of baggage, and a lot of teams are like, that's I'm fine. You know, like, we don't need that additional baggage and name that goes along with it.
Is
so,
it fake Louis is the question we want to be asking ourselves.
It's a very fair question. And when he played for Colorado, it was productive, but as a true freshman, you know, the trouble that he caused on the field, off the field, etc. It gives teams a pause. And that's where a team like USF can jump in on that, especially when you have his former primary recruiter that was the one that got him to commit to Miami. And you're close to home, which was important for him, which was like one of the key factors of him transferring was like, I'm too far from home. I need to be closer to my support system. And so that's where USF and unfortunately another school up the road is going to see a benefit is, hey, this kid that wants to stay close to home,
right?
You know, it gives USF the inside track because you have DeMarcus Van Dyke, but you know, UCF is going to have the Power Four NIL money and the Power Four structure and everything like that. So what can you do with it? So again, right now USF has 84 scholarships. They have one scholarship available. To me, that scholarship is going to be used towards a wide receiver to replace Jaden Alexis going down with an ACL injury. But they can always work. You'll always work out the numbers.
Exactly.
The numbers will always work. If Cormani McClain says, I want to be a University of South Florida Bull, and there's not a scholarship available for him, there's a scholarship available for him.
Yeah,
it'll happen. I think the big question on him, right, is he had a bit of a rep before in high school for not being the hardest worker, I believe, and missing practice time and things like that. Then also like flaking on coaches when they were supposed to come. I think Miami brought their whole staff and he just didn't show up.
Right.
And so there's been some odd things with during his recruitment. So, yeah, a lot of background work I'm sure is being done, but physically a lot of talent. But it's still, we're at the point where everybody in the portal, I think it's for the most part, I think maybe receiver with the injury, maybe more of a need than they anticipated, but for the most part, it's luxury.
Right.
It's still pretty kind of luxury take. So, if they can find somebody that can make them better, they're good. If not, they're still good, which is a nice spot to be in.
I will say the two other positions to keep an eye out for is, offensive line. They have 15 offensive linemen. I think they want 16. Just with pace of play and everything, it's nice to have another body there. And then tight end is that. I would put like wide receiver, tight end is like the top two needs, and the offensive line is like luxury. They only have three tight ends technically, with Weston Wolf, Gunnar Greenwald, and then true freshman Jonathan Echols is an absolute freak of nature. I don't want him starting week one. Give him time to gel a little bit more in the system. He's already been here since the bowl game. He'll be mighty fine. Don't worry about it. But you know, I think they would want a fourth tight end in that room. Whether it's kind of your traditional blocking tight end or what.
So Weston Wolf, obviously, and Jonathan Echols both sat out the spring game due to injuries. Echols missed the entirety of spring due to an injury. And I think it was Eustique who kind of mentioned, man, they're sending out a lot of tight end offers. This is after Demo had portaled out. And I reached out to someone kind of around the program saying, hey, am I reading too much into the tight end offers that, you know, Weston and Jonathan are maybe more hurt than initially thought. And they kind of came back, no, thinking too much into it. We just need some depth there. So I think that's definitely an option. I think they offered a JUCO tight end on Thursday. And we'll kind of see how that goes from there. Again, I feel super comfortable. I guess the funny part is Kendall Dennis was a Lakeland kid. Lots of Lakeland guys in the transfer portal. Did Bill Castle ruin Lakeland football?
Him retiring?
I mean,
many are asking.
It seems like the kids are just kind of running the show, and it there hasn't been a lot of great reports out of Lakeland when you're talking to kind of people behind the scenes. There's always some sort of issue with like the Lakeland kids. So you kind of wonder what's going on. And then with Cormani, how much you chalk up him being like a 17-year-old 18-year-old kind of going through the recruiting process for the first time as a very highly touted prospect and, you know, wanting the glow of it. I think I said multiple times, if I was a, you know, top 100 five-star kid coming out of high school, I would have a top 150 and I would not parse it down until committing. I would have 150 hats on the table and pick one up one by one until I decided on the school. I completely get it. I'd be so extra. It'd be so annoying. I would be him. The thing that you kind of wonder about when you get into college and you're still not watching film, and that you know that they track how much film you watch and you still don't care. That's kind of where there's a little bit of a gray area on, all right, so does this guy care? Is he, you know, about the clicks? He claims he's not about the clicks, which is why he's transferring out of Colorado, but maybe he was a little bit about the clicks.
We'll see.
We shall see.
If you don't want the clicks, USF is great. No one watches our games.
Hold on, Steve. We're trying to get the clicks.
Damn. Chill, dog. So we'll wrap this up on a high note. Your men's golf team is now a six-time AAC champion. Absolutely phenomenal job from Steve Bradley and that crew. They cruised in the third and final round. I think it was tied going into the third round, if I'm not mistaken, or there was a one-stroke difference. I think they ended up winning by seven because Jake Peacock, who won the individual title, bogeyed 18 because he dumped the second shot into the water. I think 18, watching the final round on, what was it, Saturday? Or Sunday, one of the days. I think the at least three guys on the final four or five groups dunked it into the water short of the green, where the very hard hole placement on 18, tucked into the right corner, right over the water. So bogeys it, still wins, shoots 11 under par, shoots a career best 6 under on the final round. It's been pretty phenomenal what this golf team's done over the last decade plus. They won the Big East tournament in 2013. That head coach, Chris Malloy, went to Ole Miss. They didn't win it in 14, but then they went 15, 16, 17, 18 champions. They didn't win 19. There was no tournament in 20. They won it in 21. Finished, I think, in sixth in 2022. And then 2023, they finished in like fourth and then won it this year. Much like Erica Brennan, I still don't understand how Steve Bradley's still here. Like, it doesn't make any sense how a bigger school has not poached him yet. But God bless him and his family. It's really fun being a country club school.
It is.
Just don't look at tennis.
No, they did fine. I put a silent kind of like notch that if they win their opening round game, that this season was a success for both these teams. Men's tennis needing to get that top 25 recruiting class in, and then women's tennis needing a little bit of turnover. And they did. Both of them won their opening match game and then proceeded to get absolutely romped by the number one men's tennis lost to the number one seed Memphis, and then women's tennis lost to like the 3 seed Rice. And I think they both got swept. So. Sure. Yeah, it's whatever. Happened. It's fine.
So golf, there were 2 par 5s on the course in the tournament. As a team for the tournament, they were 18 under par on the 2 par 5s. Not a single bogey to be had. They absolutely crushed it the entire time. and that'll play, and that'll win you a lot of tournaments. If you're, you know, basically a full stroke under par on your par fives, that's going to do.
I think it's one of Tiger Woods' rules for winning golf is no bogeys on par fives.
And
no bogeys on par five.
They took advantage of it. And then, what's his name? Cooper Smith. God bless Cooper Smith. First 2 days on the second hole, I believe he was 7 over par. He was god awful. Respectfully, like I think he was 5 over on just 2 through 2 days, and then like three under the rest of the holes through 2 days. Birdie number two in the third round, and kind of cruised to a pretty decent showing there to kind of help clinch the title. Can't say enough again about what Steve Bradley's done. Women's golf kind of fell apart in the final round. Last time we chatted, they were on the verge of winning their first conference title since like 2012. Blew a 6-shot lead, and
so they didn't do themselves any favors. But also, like SMU shot 12 under.
Yeah, they went on a freaking tear in the third round. But
like it probably would have gone to a playoff if USF didn't just.
There was some good news for women's golf, though.
There was NCAA regional team heading up to North Carolina,
and then you also got Melody Green was the conference golfer of the year,
and she's going to be playing the Arnold Palmer Invitational as well as the USF representative. Just again, country club school, baby. I threw
this out in the Discord, but let's talk it out. If we did a scramble against Melanie Green, how many strokes would we need to stay competitive?
First things first, Vanessa, do you play golf? Have you played golf? You said you played a lot of sports. Was golf one of them?
It was for like a brief minute. Like I had a whole set of clubs and my parents used to bring me to the driving range. And then we did like two Saturdays of golf. It just didn't click. So like country club was not for me. Like put me down in the dirt.
No.
Oh, no. Yeah, I did. Oh, no, sorry. Putt, I did.
Right? I bet you can putt.
I can putt. You know, I there can give go. You a nice, like, really good drive. You know, there, an open, whatever it's called. I don't pay attention to golf much.
That's not good.
I'll start. So. I'm just being honest.
I appreciate the honesty. So, we'll put something safely in the fairway and you just give it a rip.
There you go.
That's fine. One big rip, I got you. You'll probably be good for the rest.
There we go. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We'll totally fine.
I'll put it as almost a hole in one.
There we go.
Love the confidence. That's what I want to see. I said seven or eight. Like, are we doing a two-man scramble or are we getting a full four?
No, we need four. Yeah.
All right.
She shoots under par like by herself.
Yeah, almost every other time.
We need maybe 18. Like it's gonna be right. I think we might get under par if we have four decent golfers.
And they have to be part of the team, right? Like we can't just like pull out a ringer. I've got a couple of really good friends. Like your brother's a good golfer.
Yes, I'll hire. He'll be my assistant for a couple weeks. Just to be he's pretty good. He's probably like a four, maybe.
That would help.
Yeah.
That would help.
You might get lucky for Vito. He seems like he'll get lucky.
I don't know. I'll have to see it before.
Vito's got spirits. This would be an excellent piece of content, but it'd be very hard to predict.
It would be very difficult to pull off.
And we'd get
I got the camera. Things. Listen, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
We would get crushed, but I think it would be fun.
Yeah. Like, realistically, like, I think it'd be rude not to take at least 10 strokes against her. Like I think that's
we need all the help we can get.
I mean
I think I it depends know. On how long the course is. I'm not
yeah like the where they played it was like I think the yardage was like 6,700.
Okay.
So that's like
not too bad.
It's not nothing. It's not the tips. It's probably like the one or two before that. Like maybe like silver at your home course maybe.
I think it would be I think we would lose, but if she gave us 18 strokes, I think we could be competitive.
Yeah, I think 18 strokes,
four man scramble.
If we get 18 strokes in a four man scramble, I think we could be competitive. Yeah. Like we need to just sell our clubs.
Hey, man, I haven't played. Season's almost coming up here. We're getting back into it.
I mean, golly. So
after she wins the Arnold Palmer thing,
yeah, we'll have
a true a true test.
Yeah, more likely
the Bayer exam or scramble.
Oh, that'd be phenomenal. I think that's it. Do you guys have anything else? Vanessa, is there anything that you want to get off your chest from this past, 4 months of covering USF, that any hottish takes that you just haven't popped off yet?
Oh, goodness. I keep most of them inside, but I think it's been an interesting 4 months, to be completely honest, from January to now, maybe even just fall. Like, I definitely, like, when we guys were talking about basketball, I thought about saying some things, but I was like, I'm going to listen. I did not, in my opinion, I didn't fully see Pryor transferring. So that is something I kind of wanted to get out. But my reporter friends were like, it's going to happen. We'll see where he goes. He also entered for the draft. I thought that was very interesting. And I think it's just very interesting, the fan base's reaction lately of like, holy crap, what are we going to do? How are we going to replace? I think coach has a really good plan. Same with football, as you guys were talking about that. I think Golish definitely has his people and he wants his people completely bought in. So like when you're saying the one guy doesn't watch film, he doesn't have clicks, Golish, I don't think, would let that fly, like, ever. Right. So it'd be, yeah, no, it'd be very, very interesting. That's one topic I try and cover a lot, too, with the football team, is their culture and how it's changed. But yeah, that's kind of what's been on my head. And then just how athletics, I feel, in the past school, this past 2023 school year, has kind of felt like a flip. Like, when I was going into USF, I was told it's not a sports school. Don't be prepared to go to a sporting event. If anything, it's maybe a basketball school. Yet here we are. I feel like basketball is absolutely flourishing. Football is flourishing. Every sport, honestly, is dominating. Track and field, as you guys said, golf, everything just keeps, we're loading up the cases a little bit. And it just feels very exciting. And that's, I love it, which actually I want to ask you guys a question, if that's okay to end it off.
Absolutely.
If a year ago when you guys were covering sports and covering USF sports, did you think that USF sports would be where we are right now with all the press tension, all the trophies coming in, the cases growing as big as it is, you know, the stadium is coming. I'm just very curious to hear that.
I think this whole year has been really about exceeding expectations. I didn't think they were going to be terrible in football, but we thought, you know, they'll win four or five games. You know, they'll win four games maybe, and that'll be a great year compared to what the last three before were. And basketball, I had no expectations. I didn't watch any basketball before this year because I was like, I'm not going to waste my time watching really bad basketball. The other guys can cover that. So, but I think it's been above expectations, which has been a pleasant surprise, because the last few years it's been consistently falling below expectation, at least the major, the football and basketball, at least. The other sports have been kind of steadily climbing a little bit in the back, like track and field in the background has kind of gotten pretty good, and to where now everyone's seeing it. But, you know, just for me, I focus mostly on football. So, it was a pleasant surprise that they were able to get to the bowl game and win. And I think they're definitely on a good trajectory. But I'm not too surprised, but I think basketball is the most surprising one because of how bad they had been before. But change your fortunes quickly there, it seems like. So
the fact that volleyball had a winning record is beyond me. Like, it's the forgotten thing, because like volleyball was really good, and then football said, hold my beer, and then basketball was like, no, really, hold my pitcher of beer. Like, I am taking over the school. And it's just kind of the team that kind of just went under the radar. Like, they were hearing prior to the season, like, they actually have some good players. Like, if things click, they could be competitive. Did not expect them to be actually truly be good, because it's been so long since they actually been good. So that was, I think that was probably the most surprising thing. And then it just kind of leading into like football being fun, outside of those two 50 pointers in the middle there, that kind of sucked ass. But everything else was a lot of fun. Basketball, again, outside the first six games, a lot of fun. And then, you know, the golf's been fun. Baseball hurts a lot. It hurts a lot. I'm not going to lie to you. Baseball was the first sport I covered at USF. I have an affinity to that baseball program. The amount of stuff that I've buried for them is astronomical. There's too many lumps under my carpet because of them. I will die for them, but God, it sucks. Like, it's and they rough. They're probably they'll probably finish 500, maybe. Getting swept by Rice, not a great look.
When they that was ready. Not fun. That was not fun in person. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
Jeff Niemann is not coming through that door for Rice, and you still got absolutely
Wade crushed. Townsend.
Wade Townsend back to back, one not and two, walking not walking through that door, and yet you still got absolutely destroyed by Rice. Like their Rice is not the baseball team they used to be, and they still got crushed. I just don't get it. This team hits the ball really well. They just can't pitch to save their lives. And it's really tough when your head coach is a pitching coach and it does not work out. So,
yeah, that is interesting that you mentioned that, because watching the game on Saturday, it was Dorsey was in for like a little bit and then they took him out and then they put Archie in. And before Archie, I think there even was one other person in there. I don't remember their name, but when I got there, because I got there towards the end, I asked my colleague, I was like, who has been pitching? Because it's not, it doesn't seem normal. And it just seems like we're going through the minx, then we're going to Archie sometimes, and then we're switching. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Typically this late in the season, if you still don't have like your A, quote unquote, A bullpen figured out, it's not going to get figured out. And they have not figured it out. And they're just... I don't think Jack Seaver's lived up to expectations. I don't think Hunter Minks lived up to expectations. I don't know. I don't know.
Like, back to the positives, though.
now I'm just sad.
Yeah, no. But
sorry.
I think going back to the original question, the turnaround, to me, the moment it started was the USF-UF volleyball game, going back to volleyball's incredible season that we still continue to recognize. When that went to five sets, I remember I messaged the Bay Area, like our moderators Discord. And I finally said what I wanted to say before the season, which was I talked to like three different people within USF Athletics, and all three of them were like, volleyball is going to be pretty good this year. But I didn't want to say it because I knew if I said it, like I would look like an idiot for once again. And then they went to five against Florida. And I remembered I told Colin and Seth and Nate, and I was like, I think volleyball is going to be good this year. Like, I think this is not like UF played bad or anything like that. I think this is like USF actually played well. And then like that kind of like sparked every, like once we got to like a certain, like the Rice game, for example, for football, the Florida State game for basketball, like you could just kind of feel early in the season that like, oh, this team is different. And I think that's kind of the crux of it all right now, is you can tell with these USF teams by like the first 1/6 of the season that they are different and that they're playing better. Mm-hmm. And then you watch the baseball team play their first like little bit and you're like, oh, okay. But like softball, aside from this past weekend, softball is doing perfectly fine this year. Peyton Dixon is wonderful. I think they're going to be an absolute force in the conference tournament because they have two of the best pitchers in the conference. But like, you know, you could just kind of feel the switches getting flipped, and they don't feel like flukes, which is, I think, the best part. Like, none of these teams feel like they're just like, oh, it was a one and done thing. We got kind of lucky with injuries and scheduling or something like that. Like, you feel like football is going to build upon this, and volleyball is going to build on this, and basketball. Yes, you lost some key pieces. You still feel like they can build off of this. So that's the good part. We just need all of the ships to rise at this point.
Yep.
I love it. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, great question. All right. With that being said, it is 10 p.m. I want to go to bed. I'm being totally candid. Is there one other thing, Seth?
No, just longer pod by the Bay this week because we're going to do an extra special transfer portal closing Ponderosa early next week. So be on the lookout for that Tuesday-ish when the portal is set to close. We'll kind of be talking more in depth there. So went a little bit long on Pod by the Bay this week, but we'll get the Ponderosa, a transfer portal special on Tuesday probably. So be on the lookout for that.
All right, I'm transferring.
You already did that once.
Your replacement just came in. So.
Yeah. You already did the basketball transfer bit. Man, we can't do it again. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Vanessa, welcome to the team. We're so excited to have you. Appreciate you jumping on kind of short notice tonight. But thanks for tuning in. As always, be safe and go Bulls.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.